Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the Political Center and have in the studio today, sitting in for Dan McKay, Senator Todd Weiler on the right. Welcome, Todd.
Good morning, Natalie.
And our other co-host on the left, Councilwoman Shireen Gorbani in studio as well. Hi, Shireen.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm well. You guys are in the Salt Lake City studio, social distancing as best you can, and I'm in my home office in Murray, Utah, and we're going to talk about the Republican National Committee and President Trump canceling his trip to Jacksonville as COVID-19 deaths soar in Florida. Oh, my. This president, I wonder how much sleep he's getting every night, Todd. I'm just saying that because it's like a turntable being in his life, right? It just keeps going round and round.
Yeah, let's give him some credit where credit's due. This is the right decision. And I think we ought to give him a little bit of kudos. I mean, you know, quite frankly, I know it's popular to criticize everything he does, but and you could say even a broken clock is right twice a day. But the president made the right call here.
Yeah, he sure did. Shireen, I'm sure, we've talked before. Has Donald Trump pivoted? Is there something new happening because he's wearing the mask? He's doing things he wasn't doing earlier on in the crisis. I think in the last program you mentioned he's like 150 days too late. But what are you seeing right now?
Yeah, so I actually also agree that the canceling of the Republican National Convention was the right thing to do. I, you know, sometimes get exhausted congratulating people for making a choice that was clearly the right choice, but it is the right thing to do. I don't know. I think we're seeing, it has to be sobering to see the death totals in this country to know that there was potentially more that could have been done on your watch. That has to weigh on him. I would think that it would weigh on anyone. I think there's been a slight change in tone. I hope that it's a recognition of the gravity of the situation. I frankly hope he can keep it up. I think we need somebody who is taking this seriously. But there are always kind of cracks in this performance, and they come quickly. The way that he gets into fights, the way that he continues to make it about him, it's problematic, but it's, again, a step in the right direction.
Yeah. No, let's do give that to him. We're going to get big news in the next likely week where the the Democratic presumptive nominee, Joe Biden, will make his running mate pick. This is because he said he'd do it by the first week of August. But a lot of things have changed since he made that statement. Todd, there's a lot of people that are saying that he shouldn't do it so early, that he should hang on a little bit, that not to rush this. But do you think we'll get news before next week at this time?
I expect that he'll probably keep to that timeline, but I don't see a lot of harm in delaying because, of course, the convention's been delayed. Of course, you need to do the pick before the convention, or at least during the convention. I think that the anticipation is you get a full week cycle or at least a bump, you know, of excitement, and then you want to get that other bump when the convention happens. Although this year with the conventions being online, and Trump has a way of sucking the life out of all of the news media cycles. I remember, I think it must have had to be very frustrating for Hillary's campaign 4 years ago, because during her convention and when she picked, and her vice president, let's be honest, her vice presidential pick wasn't very exciting. A lot of people don't even remember who it was. But
Tim Kaine.
I'm kind of one of those, I can see his face.
Tim Kaine.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is Trump has a way, if he feels like someone else is getting too much of attention, he'll just do or say something that will just suck all the oxygen out of the room. So I don't know. I don't think it really matters. I think we're going to know the pick in the next month or so.
Yeah. Shireen, let's go through the picks, some of the more popular names, and I can help with that. You can help me with it. Stacey Abrams, the one that I've thrown down in front of me here. She's a former state representative in Georgia. Mm-hmm. She comes from a state that's important to the president. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Though I don't know. I'm kind of a political junkie, and there really isn't a ton of evidence to suggest that pulling somebody from a state where you need those votes is it brings the kind of bump that people think that it does. Georgia might be different. There's been a lot of political currents in that space, and there are two Senate races up as well that are, I think, being seen as more competitive than they would have been, certainly in a slightly different or more normal environment. So I think that's a really, I mean, the work that she's been doing, Stacey Abrams in particular, has been running national efforts on protecting voting rights. And I think that kind of energy and focus is a really, is a huge asset to...
Impressive woman.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to go through these names, and Todd, feel free to jump in here.
Well, and I just want to say, you know, if Stacey Abrams is qualified to be vice president, then so is Patrice Arendt. And, you know.
To be clear, Patrice Arendt would be an amazing vice president.
I know, but
so
I'm
I don't
just
know
saying
what your point is.
The fact that she ran, I've never seen someone run and lose an election and get so much mileage out of it as Stacey Abrams. And I'm not necessarily being critical, but. I know what the allegations are, but that election result was not even close. It's not like she lost by two votes. She lost by tens of thousands of votes.
So, and I think there's an interesting point there, though, which is, you know, she's done a lot of work on the national level organizing national campaigns and strategies.
Mostly because she lost.
Around a critical issue.
And Democrats said it was stolen, you know, from her, but the evidence didn't bear that out, so...
We can't take too much time on all of these, but Todd, you make the point that that would be her weak spot. How about Susan Rice, both of you, former national security advisor? She's been on some of the Sunday shows recently. I think she's got to be probably in the top five.
I think the Trump campaign has to be hoping for Susan Rice because it brings back all of the unmasking, all of the Obamagate stuff that Trump wants to talk about. So I think that would be a pick that the Republicans would relish.
I think
Shereen,
it would be an interesting choice given the chaos of the Trump administration's foreign policy. It would be definitely a heavy counterweight in that space where we have zero
I don't
leadership.
Have any data to support it, but Kamala Harris, I think, would probably be favored to be the number one pick, senator from California, obviously a presidential candidate, former attorney general for California.
Kamala has the negatives. She'll turn off some of the left because of her record as a prosecutor. Also, she comes from a state that Biden will easily win, and she doesn't help with the Senate races. So I don't know that, you know, she's going to be top of the political calculus that's going on right now.
Yeah. I would just say Harris really comes with a very practical approach to politics. I think that she could be a good uniter, and I think that she would have the ability to really pull together just an impressive agenda and be a good support.
And a year ago, she was calling Biden a racist in the Democratic debates.
Yeah, I think that may hurt her here. You know, I'm not saying a lot from the political middle. This is not my party, but I will say that I'm really intrigued by the Illinois Senator Tammy Duckworth. I just saw her present a few times and I started to see her potential. She's got a military background and she feels to me as more of a uniter. And, you know, maybe it's worth asking, what would we look for in a candidate, right? I'm looking for someone that unifies, that heals, that's less partisan, that's more inclusive and obviously qualified to be the chief.
Well, Duckworth's stock is clearly rising. I'm hearing her name more and more often. I think most Americans don't know who she is yet, but that would change, of course, if she was picked.
Yeah,
any
I think
comments
her,
there, Shereen?
Her service to this country, her tenacity. I remember the images of her nursing her baby on the Senate floor. I think that she would be an incredible pick. She's an incredible leader and just an absolutely... a fierce defender of our democracy.
Shereen, was she the first sitting senator to give birth while in office?
Yeah,
that's interesting. Now, I haven't mentioned Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar. Do you guys want to throw out any other names, then we can move on?
Yeah, so Klobuchar, I think, has actually said that she was no longer in that mix. Warren is an interesting one because it sounds like she and Biden are having regular conversations. I think Warren's probably more powerful in the Senate.
Well,
yeah.
I think she'll be
a cabinet member if Biden wins.
I'm going to expect that Joe Biden will pick a much younger VP candidate. I think Elizabeth Warren is too close to his age, and I think that would hurt his ticket.
Yeah, probably. Well, lots to look forward to thinking about. Before we break, let's just talk briefly about the federal stimulus. That's the big Washington news this week. What are they going to do? Looks like the $600 extra of unemployment insurance is gone, and it will be reduced to $200. That's still a big deal. Like, you could still be making $200 more per week than you were as an employed person. So that's just a compromise. But we have Senator Romney making news with the Trust Act. This is the idea to try to pair some sort of stimulus to some sort of deficit reduction or debt reduction process. I'm really high on what the senator's doing there, Shireen.
So say more.
Well, you know, I'm an economist by training. We're borrowing all this money to help us through a very difficult time. But by the time our stimulus is done, it will be equivalent to about 20% of our GDP. That is massive.
Yeah.
And it's all borrowed money. And we have to get serious once we're through this with wrestling with entitlements and the problems that we've got in our federal budget. So I really like the Trust Act because it puts in place a process to deal with insolvency of some of our important entitlements.
Yeah,
I like it too. And I think that the $600 per week extra on top of regular unemployment was a good little shot in the arm. But clearly, and I've seen this in my own circle of friends and family, it has motivated people not to go back to work. And that's the exact opposite of what I think the government should be rewarding. So
national data doesn't bear that out. There are a lot of, you know, people that are still continuing, and it has really been instrumental in protecting housing and saving families from hunger. I am concerned, you know, I guess I would say the thing that struck me as all of this was happening was the disarray among Senate Republicans. The effort to pull this together seemed laborious. It seemed like in the end there wasn't great consistency or even knowledge of what ended up in the bill. So I think it just continues to bear the lack of leadership from Senate Republicans. And I think, you know, Americans really do deserve better.
Well, I think that there was an ideological dispute. I think they fell into about three different camps with the Senate Republicans of what to do moving forward. And I think it does take some leadership to get them, you know, together to get something passed, because we clearly need to extend some type of package. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I was talking to a young 20-something constituent just last week, and he's being criticized by his friends for continuing to work when they're all literally home playing video games, making more money than they made before. And there is something wrong with that.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, joined by Todd Weiler and Shireen Gourbani. In our next segment, we'll talk about local news. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gourbani on the left.
Todd Weiler on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, and we want to talk about what's happening in Utah in the gubernatorial race. Some interesting news this week. We have Chris Peterson on the Democratic side, and we have Spencer Cox on the Republican side. The Rotarians invited him to a debate, and Spencer Cox said, "I'm not debating you in July, Chris Peterson. Sorry." That made a little bit of news, and it came out, I guess, that some people think that Cox is only gunning for one debate, which would be unfortunate with an election this important. What are you seeing there, Todd? And then let's get Shireen's comments.
Well, it's interesting. I don't see Ben McAdams and Burgess Owens debating. I don't see, our attorney general candidates debating. I do think it's quite early for a debate. I've never seen a major debate in July. And I think that everyone knows debates work in favor of the underdog. So I don't think Spencer's going to go out of his way to help Chris Peterson.
You know, Todd, from the political right, it's not an issue to me of whether they debate early, like right now, but I would like to see more than one debate during the cycle. Shireen?
Yeah, I think Utahns deserve to know where each of these, candidates think this state should go. I'm distressed that, you know, there's not a more robust leaning into, I think, the opportunity that we have right now. When people are hungry for solutions, they want to see vision, they would like leadership and answers. And, Lieutenant Governor Cox has been a little absent when it comes to the vision and the clear proclamation of things as simple as, should there be a mask mandate in this state? So I think that Utahns deserve a candidate, candidates who will go through difficult issues, who will have these conversations. While, you know, July might feel early, we're about, a few minutes away here from August, and ballots drop early in our state. So mm-hmm. I think the more opportunities we have to share our visions for where we're going, why we think the, ideology that we're bringing is the right ideology, why we are fighting for as Democrats, you know, expanded access to health care, making sure that we have protections for people when it comes to things like the housing crisis that we're facing or addressing homelessness. All of these issues are complex and could deserve their own, you know, at least hour from these candidates. And I think it would be healthy for our democracy to see two very smart people have, you know, civil conversations about real differences in ideology. It's not the kind of leadership we're getting at the federal level. And I think that it would be refreshing, and it should be, I think, every Utah's expectation to have that kind of robust debate about the future of this state.
I think Spencer Cox is trying not to step on his boss's toes. And Gary Herbert, I think, has been told by legislative leaders, if he does a mask mandate, that the legislature will call itself into a special session and undo it. You know, I spent Pioneer Day, Natalie, in Wayne County and Bicknell. There are zero reported cases there this year of COVID. So why do we in Salt Lake want to make sure that people in Loa and Bicknell are wearing masks when they don't have any cases down there? So I think this statewide thing, you know, is overblown. I'm glad that the number of cases has gone down dramatically in Salt Lake County since Mayor Wilson did the mask mandate. I think it's shown that it's effective.
But in Summit County.
Why are we so quick? We've got 12 counties that are so that are green. Why are we just obsessed with those people having to wear masks when they're not having problems in their areas?
Yeah, and I think what I would say is that we've talked about this previously, you know, a targeted approach that would really look at population density and what's happening in those areas is the smart thing to do. But really saying above and beyond, you know, pushing this decision, difficult decision, you know, into pockets. And we know that people don't just live in Salt Lake County and work in Salt Lake County, that there's a lot of back and forth from Davis County to Utah County, where we have the kind of highest population density, I think, is where it makes sense, especially as we're heading back into school. But, you know, if we're not going to get comment on it, I think that we just continue to kind of hope for local leadership that's going to rise to the moment.
You know, I don't fault Spencer Cox for not commenting on a mask mandate. I just recognize that he's the sitting lieutenant governor, and he works and serves under an existing governor. And I would credit Spencer Cox with doing a great job in terms of his own public messaging and his leading by example. And when he's governor, I'll expect him to speak out on it, but I'm okay with him right now doing what he's doing. I will say that the evidence is really speaking for itself on masks. And I think the adoption's rising. So we'll know more soon. I want to change topics just a little bit, still on the impacts of COVID, but let's talk about the reopening of schools this fall. Wow, this is dizzying. We've had a governor that believes in local control. He's asked through the Office of Ed and all of this good work from the state board, but every district's coming up with their own recommendations. They have to have them out, Shereen and Todd, by August 1?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so they're all coming out. But what we're getting is a potpourri of proposals. Todd, you're a Davis County guy. What's your district doing?
Well, yeah, I also represent Rose Park, but Davis School District announced yesterday that they're going to go every other day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So depending on the letter of your alphabet, and then Friday, everybody will be home. And I've talked to two local school board members. Their phone's just ringing off the hook. Everyone's mad at them. And I think these local school officials, I think that's where the decision should be made. They're in a no-win situation. No matter what they do, about a third of the parents are going to be mad at them. And they're very much earning the very low pay that they get for those jobs. And I feel sorry for them, because cannot make everyone happy right now.
Shereen, what's happening in your neck of the woods? You're a Lower Avenues resident, if I remember right.
Yes, and I also, my husband teaches in the Catholic school system, so he's a freshman English teacher at Judge. So we're in a bind, too, because the expectation is he goes back to school, and I have a 5-year-old that we've been getting excited for kindergarten for the last year, trying to figure out where we do this and how we do it, with both having full-time work requirements is stressful, and I also know that I'm in a privileged situation where we're probably going to figure out how to make it work. And many families don't have that kind of privilege. And I just fully acknowledge that this is a very difficult decision. And, you know, I'm worried that we didn't spend the summer investing in closing the digital divide, which we should have done as a statewide initiative. We've got some real opportunity, I think, to make sure that if we do close down and kids go home, that they can log on. It's been hard to even track, you know, what the impact is for some of those kids that aren't able to get connected when they're at home. And we also know that, you know, the investment that we make in kids' lives in the early years of their lives are so critically important to their long-term success. So thinking about what a strategy would look like if we do see, you know, cases rising, are we going to keep third grade and under in the schools? Are we going to keep, you know, these kinds of questions? You know, local control is good, but smart leadership is better.
And Shireen is right. You actually have to have a tablet or a computer or a phone. But I want to just take a second. I've sat on the committee for 9 years that funds UEN, or Utah Education Network. We have thrown tens of millions of dollars at this network every year, and it is paying off right now. Utah is light years ahead of some of our neighboring states in our infrastructure, I mean, literally statewide. And we were well prepared on a statewide basis with the infrastructure to handle the education at home. But yeah, we have to, even if we have the greatest network in the world, if you don't have a computer or a tablet, of course you can't tie into it. But the ones that can tie into it, we have a very stable system.
Yeah. You know, I'll say from the political middle, I just have a colleague, a work colleague that has a son and a daughter. They're actually twins, but one's in one district and the other's in another school district.
Wow.
Can you imagine how tricky that would be? And it does raise the question of, should there be a state plan and not a district by district plan? I just, you know, throw out that. I mean, it gets your mind thinking in a public policy way. Todd, we're hearing that there'll be a special session August 20th. My expectation is that they'll figure out how to spend the last remaining CARES dollars before the end of the year.
Yeah,
in that session. Maybe that'll get at the digital divide a little bit. Shireen, I know in Utah Leads Together, Volume 4, which is the economic response and recovery plan for the state, it does include a lot of investment for the digital divide.
Yep.
As part of our accelerating of bonding.
Yeah.
So it might still be more on the infrastructure side than on the, you know, hardware in your home. But there's some things happening. Todd, any news on Capitol Hill related to the special session, response to COVID?
It's been a relatively slow month.
Or is it the dog
month?
Days of summer?
Yeah, it's been a slow month, which was by design. I'll tell you, I had a caucus 2 weeks ago. There were over 45 bills on the wish list for the special session, and that was a month out. And I have to admit, one or two of them were my bills, but I don't know which ones will make the cut. But my guess is we'll have less than 20 bills on there. But I'll tell you, Shireen might like this, but my bill was ballot harvesting. We have some state laws that kind of allude to the fact that it's illegal for candidates to pick up ballots and mail them, but it's not clear cut. And I think that's something that needs to be clarified before the November election, since it's going to be our all mail-in ballots for president. And we have a president who's saying that you can't trust the mail-in ballot system. So I think we should do everything in Utah to make sure people can trust it.
Yeah. Shireen, anything else you want to add there?
I would just add, it's been interesting. I've gotten some interest, people asking if they can become poll workers. You know, I'm so grateful of the Utah spirit of stepping up to volunteer, especially younger people who are healthy, who are saying they're willing to do this work, which is really important. But we're really hoping people will vote at home.
Yeah.
That's what we want people to do.
But traditionally, poll workers have been older,
they
so that's
have.
Great that yeah. we have that interest.
Yeah, so that's heartening. I'm always, like I said, uplifted by the sort of jump in and help attitude. But I think there are a lot of questions around just how this is going to work. And I'm guessing there'll be some additional changes. We had some changes for the primary that you could mail in your ballot on election day, which was one of the clarifications, which also came from the Supreme Court. But then
yeah.
we've got, I think there's a good opportunity to talk about, you know, are people going to be able to register same day like they
yeah.
could previously? They couldn't at the primary. They have been able to in Utah historically. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what kinds of solutions. And I'm grateful that I live in a state that doesn't seem as actively engaged in voter suppression in some places that we are seeing across this country.
Oh, back to Stacey Abrams.
Yeah.
Shireen, I didn't tell you I was going to do this. Todd, I didn't tell you either. So this will kind of catch you by surprise. But the LDS temple, they unveiled a time capsule, 128 years below the temple. Had some books in it, coins in it, those sorts of things. Shireen, if you were doing a time capsule right now, what would you put in it?
Oh, wow.
Todd gets the advantage to think a little bit longer.
Geez, like, I guess I just have COVID on my mind so much. I would be thinking
yeah.
about something related to this moment. Somebody was doing a thread on Twitter of like pictures, images of what's happening now. And I think I would want some sort of visual documentation of what's changed in our society right now.
Mm-hmm.
Geez, I don't know. Yeah, some great books, ballots. It would be interesting. I don't know. It would be interesting.
Todd, what's on your mind? What would you put in a time capsule if something of significance?
Nothing about Donald Trump. I'll echo Shereen. I wish we had more information from the Spanish flu pandemic. I know we have some. Those pictures that surfaced with people with masks on, that was fascinating for me. I thought those were fake at first. But I just want to talk about this capsule because, unfortunately, they poured the cement in there, and the moisture from the cement, as it was drying, it toasted all the pictures. They had pictures of Joseph and Hiram Smith in there, and we don't have any photographs of them, but they didn't survive. It's sad that they didn't know a little bit more about what they were doing because I wish some more of that stuff had survived.
Yeah. You know, that's going to have to take the place of our gripes and gratitude, but an interesting thought. I'll just say I was thinking I'd put a mask in there, just symbolize the moment. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm with Shereen Gourbani and Todd Weiler. Thanks for listening. Anthony Scoma has been our producer. Stay safe, everyone.